It's time for the best 60 minutes of your life. This is the Homer Hour, broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All studio at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee, alongside former Packer Brian Belaga. Here's Kyle Wallace.
It is the best 60 minutes in radio. It is the best 60 minutes of your day. I was the greatest 60 minutes in radio. It is the Homer Hour here on ESPN Milwaukee, 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee. I'm Kyle Wallace, in for Homer. I'm the Cousin Sub of the day. Always love me a good cheesesteak from Cousin Sub. Today we're joined by Brian Belaga, as always, on Monday. Brian, how you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm doing good, Brian. It's the first time that we got a chance to work one-on-one, mano-a-mano with each other. It's going to be a fun ride. I'm a little less talkative than Homer. I won't interrupt you as much as Homer, and I won't debate with you as much as Homer does.
You know, Homer doesn't do too much debating. Interrupting, yes. Yes, interrupting, yes, for sure.
Well, yeah.
And talking's fine. He's allowed to, he can ramble. I like to let him ramble. It's okay with me.
All right, well, sounds good. Well, I'm going to try to do my best Homer impression when it comes to rambling as well. And so the big conversation that still, to me, is bleeding over from the weekend is that Christian Watson deal that got done. And there's just been questions about, was he worth it? What has he done to prove that he deserved this? But, Brian, what I really want to know for you is, why is the potential, right, that Christian Watson has for his talent worth the risk of giving a guy like Christian Watson this extension where he has yet to play a full season, he's yet to get to 1,000 yards, he's yet to get to 50 catches? Why is paying him this money worth the risk?
Yeah, I mean, I those are all good questions. And, I mean, you could say valid, right? I mean, I guess all those things are true. But for me, I look at his body of work when he has been healthy, right? And especially last year, like obviously he was rehabbing an injury and things like that. So you look at what he did from rehabbing an injury. Obviously, it was ACL. It was his ACL injury that he was rehabbing, and how he came back and how he performed. And then I don't think he missed a game once he came back, right? Even when he got knocked out of Denver, he still came back.
He came back the next week. He sure did.
Yeah, he came back the next week and played. So, to me, I look at his body of work from when he's been healthy, and obviously it's been a little inconsistent early in his career, but you kind of look at, I mean, the ACL, I don't, because I've had two of those. I mean, it's not like you can do more things in the off season to prevent an ACL. Like, it's, I mean, there's going to be some, you know, Instagram or Twitter specialists out there, like, there's tons of things you can do to stop an ACL tear. No, there's not. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing he could have done about that. That's hard to prevent when you get put in the wrong place, wrong time. But I think his potential and what he shows he can do and what he means to this offense and kind of his value to Jordan Love earn him that contract. And I think potential of, if he continues to perform at that level, 27 and a half is going to be a bargain.
Yeah,
it really will be.
Brian, when you talk about it, that's the thing for me, is that I thought it was an overpay, but we'll see. Like, right, it might be overpay now, it may not be overpay, but at the end of the day, I'm happy he's still in the green and gold. But you talked about Jordan Love, and that is one of the things where it seemed like that, out of all the receivers, yeah, Romeo Dobbs was that safety blanket, but it just seemed like that connection from Love to Watson, there was always something there. He always felt like that was his number one type guy that he wanted to throw the ball to, at least when it came to the wide receivers. How impactful is this to have a chemistry between quarterback and wide receiver Jordan Love to help this offense really elevate?
I mean, I think it's big, because I think we looked at the last time, the last quarterback, Aaron, when he lost his true number one, how'd that offense go, right? When Devontae left, how'd that offense look?
Not good.
It looked very good. Yeah, not very good, right? And when you have a quarterback and wide receiver that have that type of chemistry and they understand what each other wants all the time, and it's kind of – I used to see it all – I mean, obviously with Tay, but it was with Aaron and Jordy that it was ridiculous, the same wavelength those two were on at all times. when you have that type of connection with a wide receiver, I mean, it's hard to put a price tag on that because they just know where to be. They know what the quarterback's thinking. They understand, like, within a route, if they need to break a route off to get friendly and do things like that, they just get it, right? And Watson, at this point, seems like that guy for Jordan Love. I think Tucker Kraft is a big piece of that as well. I think Tucker Kraft is one of those guys for Jordan Love as well. And when that contract gets done, that's going to be an eye-watering number because I think it's going to be top tight end, maybe top three tight end money. Like that's what that's going to be because that's the type of player he is. But from a wideout standpoint, he's your number one, right? Like if you continue to you couldn't continue to go down this path of, oh, we don't have a number one. We don't have a number one. They can all be number ones. And that would contradict what essentially Matt said in the offseason of saying we need to define roles, right? Like we need to do a better job of defining the players' roles. And paying a wide receiver that is pretty much declaring him as your number one wideout, right?
So you consider him the number one? Like I look at it and I love me some Christian Watson, but I'm still skeptical of him being the number one guy. And like when I look at the expectations, when I think of a number one wide receiver, I think of a guy that's gonna give me 1,000 yards. But more importantly, Brian, in the playoffs last year, he wasn't the number one guy. He has three catches, 30 some yards on 7 targets, and guess to me who the number one guy was in the playoffs, a guy that's now in New England, and it seems to be a theme where Romeo Doubs, when it came to the playoffs, was the most dependable wide receiver that we have. Not saying I would rather have Romeo. I'm just saying my expectation, if you're the number one guy, you should have been able to show to me or display to me in the past that you were going to elevate your game in all of the biggest moments, and I don't think Christian Watson has done that quite yet.
Yeah, no, like, and here's the thing, right? Like, when you get to playoff football, defenses are going to do things to take away your most, I mean, and this may sound cliche, but and you think, oh, teams do that all the time. They do that every game. I mean, they do to an extent, but in the playoffs, you're looking to shut down certain avenues all game, right? Like, and Christian Watson is that big play avenue that will open up a game at any given time over the middle of the field, what he did to Chicago in the first game or in Green Bay, technically. They don't want a repeat of that. Hence why you saw Golden go off, why Dobbs got a ton of targets like and catches. Like Chicago did a good job playing defense against Christian Watson. They had a good plan for him, right? So that's why you saw other guys step up and make plays. Like I guess I just – all the questions you're asking are valid, in my opinion. Like, I mean, do I think he's a primetime performer? I do. I think in big moments, I think he'll be a guy, especially this year, kind of confidence boost you get from that type of deal, a little bit of a weight off your shoulder getting that deal. I think it frees players up a little bit, especially at the wide receiver position, because it is such a, like, I don't want to put this in a bad way. It's a needy position. If you don't get the ball, you can't do anything, right? Mm-hmm, you need the ball.
That's what the receivers say.
And then the pressure mounts and things like that. So now that that's gone, right? He's been financially rewarded. Just go out and play your best ability. And I think when guys are able to do that, you kind of saw it from him last year when he was rewarded with the one-year extension, right? Just got the one-year extension, and that was essentially guaranteed money, whatever it was, $14 million or whatever it was. Okay, got a little extension, played really well. Got another extension. I don't expect anything different. I think he's going to play just as well, if not better, and he's going to play more games. So, like, I think the 1,000 yards is going to be a target that he hits. No problem. How many catches? I don't know. I guess we could all debate that.
Wait a minute, Brian. You said he's going to play more games and 1,000 yards is no problem. What makes you so confident that he's over this injury history? Because even though he did play after the Broncos game after he got hurt, he still got nicked up and banged up. What makes you feel so confident that he's past the nagging injuries that he's dealt with throughout his career?
Yeah, I mean, listen, guys go through tough patches and things like that. I was one of them. I went through multiple ACLs and tearing cartilage in my knee and popping meniscuses and kind of working through that throughout my career. So, like, I understand it. And some of it's luck. Some of it's you know, maybe you should have focused a little bit more on, like, I mean, as a lineman, I didn't have any soft tissue injuries like these guys running sprints every single play, like wideouts and things like that. Like, that wasn't a common injury for us. Ours were more knee and joint related compared to what they have. But I think the longer you're in this league, the more you understand the things required in the offseason to take care of yourself. Now, like I said prior about his ACL injury, you can't prevent those things. Those things are, they're freak accidents. You can't predict them, but the things you can protect are soft tissue injuries, and you could do a really good job in the offseason preparing your body for that. And I think as he gets older in the league and he understands the wear and tear and the demand, I think just taking care of your body in a certain way, and I don't know him personally, but I know it seems like he cares a lot and he's a professional. Yeah. So to me, that's what professionals do, right? They figure out what they need to do in the offseason to take care of themselves so they stay on the field for as many games as humanly possible, be as productive as humanly possible. And I just see that in him. And like I said, when you get the financial reward, it takes a weight off your shoulder. And you can just go be yourself. And I think that's going to be something that we see from him.
Brian, I absolutely love to hear that. And you know, I like to talk a little trenches. And so we're definitely going to talk trenches today. We're going to talk about that offensive line and defensive line. But I think about the makeup of the wide receiver room and how much can having a great wide receiver, can that do anything to alleviate a questionable offensive line? Because we've talked about it, you know, here, I'm sure you guys talked about it in Homer Hour. We talked about it in Kyle and Bruss. And everybody's talking about, oh, it's great to have Jaden Reed, is great to have Matthew Golden, is great to have Christian Watson, is great to have Tucker Kraft, but if Jordan Love doesn't have enough time to throw the football, what good is it? Can a great wide receiver help alleviate a questionable offensive line at the Green Bay Packers at this, you know, at this juncture going into the season, a lot of question marks? Can a wide receiver like Christian Watson, who can get the ball and do a lot of things with it quickly, can that help an offensive line that may have question marks?
It can, but it can't do it all the time. If that makes sense,
oh,
right?
No.
Like, it's to the point where, like, okay, especially early in the season, it's going to help because LaFleur's coming out with introducing a new game plan essentially early on every week, and there's not as much tape, and there's variety in different things, shorter routes, combinations that get guys open really quick and get them open into space, and get guys the ball really quick, like Golden, like Watson, that have that true breakaway speed and let them work. As the season goes on and there's more tape, those things defenses start to tighten up on that. And you have to rely on your offensive line to hold up and win one-on-one matchups so those guys can get open downfield. And you can't live in that short game, that short passing game zone the whole season. It just doesn't work. You can't do it. You need to be able to stretch the field and threaten teams downfield. Now, there's ways to do that. There's obviously the straight drop back, and then there's play action, which I'm hoping is a big part of this season to help protect that offensive line as well. But it can and it can't, essentially, is the answer, right? Like, you having those guys that are very dynamic and can get open quick is obviously a huge plus. But at the same time, it's not going to happen. Say you throw the ball 35 times a game. You maybe get 8 of those a game, right? For the other times, your line has to hold up in 5 or 7 mm-hmm. step drops and do the job that they need to do. So, listen, I wouldn't say I don't want those wide receivers, because I do, because they're very good players. But at the same time, the O-line's going to have to do their part.
Brian, you played in the NFL, and you're attached to the Green Bay Packers, obviously. But, you know, would you consider yourself to be a huge Packers fan? Like, you lean too much towards the Packers, or can you be pretty balanced when you look at different position groups across the NFL?
I feel like I can be pretty balanced.
Do we overinflate? Like, I think we have a really good wide receiver room. I think we have 4 good pass catchers. But as Packers fans, do you think we overinflate how good the wide receivers are? Like, I look at it, there's a lot of good duos in the NFL when it comes to wide receivers. And we talk about how good this room is. Is this room a top 15 wide receiver room, you think?
Yeah. I mean, we talk about duos. We talk about duos, right? But, like, I feel like this group, because I put in Tucker Kraft, they're very deep. There's multiple ways. It's not just like, you know, Chase and Higgins and Cincinnati, where it's two guys essentially, and you got to do your best to take away Chase and, you know, do, you know, it's not like that. There's four different ways that you can get beat with this, depending on personnel group, of course, right? What personnel group's on the field. But there's multiple options all the time for Jordan Love through the tight end position, in the slot, out wide with this group, which is dynamic. And that's, that causes issues for defenses as well when you have to try to cover all those different field zones, right? The tight end runs a lot through the middle of the field. Christian Watson runs a lot to the deep third of the field. Reed's probably going to be more intermediate. And then you got Golden that I feel like we don't really know what he does best yet, but we saw in Chicago when he gets it, he can make some good things happen. So, like, they still haven't found what he does best yet. I think once he gets going, defenses are going to have issues. So do I think top 15? Yeah, for sure. I think top 15.
I'd love to hear. You were in the league. You were around a lot of great wide receivers. I mean, the wide receiver room you played with was absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
So you played with some great ones, and that's the standard that was set for me. But, of course, this is the Homer Hour, always joined by Brian Bulaga every Monday. You can join in on a conversation by calling in or texting to the Carbless Talk and Text Line, where Liz is more at 800-990-3776. You can call in and text in with any of your thoughts. But coming up on the other side, I want to ask Brian if the Packers can win the North without Micah Parsons for the first 8 weeks. His brother, Terrence Parsons, broke some news. We'll share that next.
More of the Homer Hour coming up next on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
It is the Homer Hour here on ESPN Wisconsin. Make sure you watch and stream us live by going to ESPN Milwaukee on YouTube. Give us a like, give us a share. Make sure you give us a subscribe as we're talking about Christian Watson signing that big deal. And I just wanted to hear from someone who played in the NFL, played with some really talented wide receivers, of whether or not this deal was worth it. And that somebody is Brian Bulaga, who joins us here on the Homer Hour. I'm Kyle Wallace in for Homer today, the cousin sub of the day for Homer on the Homer Hour. Now, before we went to break, I asked you about Micah Parsons because Micah does a lot of talking, but his brother also on Twitter X does a lot of talking as well. And he revealed something in a back and forth with somebody, another user on Twitter, that Packers fans may need to pump the brakes when it comes to thinking that Micah Parsons might be back week 5 for the Chicago Bears game. What he said, Brian, was Micah Parsons may start just practicing around that time. He may not actually be back until at least week 8. And if anybody like me who's a Packers fan, you had a little sort of little panic that came out of your system because you're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. We're just trying to get by the first 4 weeks without Micah, but the first 8 weeks, almost half the season without Micah. Now, Brian, do you think the Green Bay Packers are going to be able to sustain any type of a level of success without Micah Parsons for the first 8 weeks? Can they win the NFC North without Micah playing for the first 8 weeks, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, listen. When Micah said no football for 9 months, right, probably should have taken that serious. Like, maybe not even practice for 9 months, right? Like, no football-related activity for 9 months, which then puts his brother's timetable pretty accurately, right? Like, where he would be based on, you know, 8 weeks into the season or whatever it may be, right? Because he does need a ramp-up period once he starts practicing to not just kick rust off, but just get his football, you know, fibers firing and his cardio and things like that. Like, it takes time. Based on the schedule, I still – is it going to be easy? No. Without Mike, no. I don't think it'll be easy at all to win games without. I think it's defensively, they're going to, maybe not the first 4 weeks, but once you get into Dallas and Chicago, it'll be a struggle. It'll be definitely way more difficult without Micah.
Detroit, yeah. Going on the road to Detroit.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult. Do I think they could still win the North with Micah out for 8 weeks? Yeah, I think they can.
You don't sound too confident. I myself thought this team was going to win the NFC North, but without Michael Parsons, it's going to be on Jonathan Gannon really to devise some type of game plan to get this defense ready, just like we kind of saw 2 years ago when we didn't have the Michael Parsons effect.
Yes. I mean, and listen, when you don't have a guy that does so much for your defense for that many weeks, no matter what team you are, right? Like, you could be, you know, this year with the Rams, you know, Myles Garrett's out for that amount of time. Like, you're going to see holes in it, right? You're going to see holes in that defense, and the defense will struggle just because you don't have that type of premier player that you've built this thing around, essentially. And that's the way it is. When you have that type of player that a defense is built around and he's out for an extended period of time, there's going to be holes that will show, and the defense will struggle. I think, though, there's enough games that they can win to put themselves in a good position if it is 8 weeks. If it is 8 weeks, I think they could win enough to still do damage and win the division once he returns and they get going down the stretch of the season, back stretch of the season. Again, it won't be easy. I mean, he's such a, like, you watch what he does, and he's so vital, and he does everything so well, and he just causes offenses to be uncomfortable and quarterbacks to be uncomfortable all the time because he's always there. Without that presence, yeah, I mean, any team's gonna struggle without that guy there. So while it may come to shock his people that his brother said that, at the same time, like Micah said, 9 months no football. He didn't say, like, oh, 9 months and I'll return to my first game. He said 9 months no football. So, like, he kind of said it without saying it. And it was up to whoever that was kind of reading through the lines to pick up what he was saying. Because I remember I asked Jason Wilde after, you know, I think it was last week, I said, so, like, that means 9 months he's not practicing. And he was like, that we don't know. And that's what I took it as.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I hear that, 9 months no football, that means no practice. And I understand it. He wants the full 9 months to let that thing heal. And I get it because I've gone through two of them. So I understand. And, you know, when you go through the first one, you want as much time as humanly possible. My second one, because I understood the rehab and the surgery and when I could push, when I couldn't push, it was a lot quicker. But for a guy like Micah, the way he cuts, the way he moves, how he's so laterally good.
Yeah.
Explosive. You don't want any questions or any doubts in your mind if that thing's okay. So, like, to me, him saying 9 months, and it's not that big of an ask. It's not like he's saying, I need 13 months. He's not saying that. He's saying 9 months. And to me, that's totally reasonable. And he's protecting his long-term future.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that one, but something Dave from Aaron said something that was going through my head here on the Carbless Talking text line at 800-990-3776. You can call in or you can text in and chime in on today's conversation as we're talking about the fact that Terrence Parsons Jr., the brother of Michael Parsons, said, don't be surprised or shocked if Micah's out for 8 weeks. I think about Christian Watson and when he returned, right? And I think about other players, like as Dave from Aaron talked about, Patrick Mahomes seems to be far ahead. Why is it so different for certain players at different positions to come back faster or slower from an ACL injury?
Well, certainly the quarterback position and a defensive end and the way he plays defensive end are two different demands, right? Like, they are completely different demands and what the job entails and requires. And I mean, I'm not taking anything away from Patrick Mahomes, but he's not out there moving like Micah Parsons. He's not doing what Micah does play after play. Now,
true. That's true.
Now, it's not saying that Micah's rehab isn't up to snuff and he's not doing what he needs to do. No, he's probably right on target. He's probably doing great, chances are. But he set a timeline for when he's going to be comfortable. And he's probably set that with his doctors, with his agent and everything like that. And Green Bay can't sit here and go, no, you're going to go at 7 months. It's like, no, that's not how that's going to work. That's not how that's working out. So why one, if Micah wanted to play when Mahomes, say Mahomes wants to play, say Micah wanted to play at the start of the season or a couple games into it, he could. Is it the best thing? Maybe, maybe not. But that doesn't mean that his rehab is not going as well as, say, Mahomes or Christian Watson's or anything like that. That's not to say. It's just it's a matter of comfort level. How are you feeling? How is everything responding? Where are you in the rehab process? Because with this injury, everyone heals at a different timetable, at a different pace, and things go differently than based on your demand on the position that you play. What goals and what targets do you need to hit? And that's different for everybody. So I don't have an answer for why Mahomes can do it at whatever amount of months or weeks or whatever it may be, and Micah Parsons maybe later than that. Well, I'll just start right off the obvious. Like I said, two different positions, two different demands, two different players that do completely different things. If Micah was playing quarterback, yeah, he'd probably be back when Mahomes comes back. But he doesn't do that. He does something completely different.
Everybody can't be Adrian Peterson. That's what I'm hearing, Brian, is that AP was absolutely ridiculous with that.
He was, but look what happened to AP after he did that.
What happened?
Tons of injuries that probably stemmed from that. Compensating. Not saying that he obviously wasn't very detailed in his rehab, but when you put yourself through that and you come back that quick, there's going to be compensation somewhere that you weren't able to hit throughout the rehab process. That knee may feel rock solid, but there's other parts of the body that have not been acclimated yet, right? And that's part of the ramp-up process that you kind of have to go through. I the accomplishment that AP did was ridiculous, and how he played was ridiculous. Yeah, was. But then you look at the next few years of kind of what happened, you can't help but think there were some lingering effects from coming back that quick, right? And to me, that's – you don't want that to happen with Micah Parsons. You want him back 100%, then just stay at 100%.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm with you on that, Brian. So with Micah Parsons probably being – I'm resigned to the fact that he's going to be out 6 to 8 weeks. So it is what it is. Now, when you look at this defense, Brian, tell me, like, who's going to be the guy that fills the void? Is it going to be Lucas Van Ness? Is it going to be like a guy coming out of nowhere, a Baron Sorrell? Are you going to expect Javon Hargrave to fill that void, or is it Edgerrin Cooper? Like, where do the Packers find a way to replace some of the production that Micah Parsons has? That is my biggest concern, because I just don't trust these guys right now. And I think about Rashawn Gary, right? Everybody gives Rashawn Gary he gets a bad rap around here, and some of it deservingly so, but at the end of the day, we knew what we were going to get from him, right? We knew he wasn't going to be an elite defender, but we knew he was going to be a guy that can go out there and play football. When I look at the current roster makeup, I don't know if we have anybody like Rashawn Gary on this roster. And what's crazy is that we may actually miss Rashawn Gary. So where do the Packers find a way to replace the production of a Micah Parsons? Because you've moved on from Kenny Clark, you've moved on from Rashawn Gary, and now you're missing Micah Parsons for the first 8 weeks of the season. Where in the hell are you going to find that production to replace all the stuff that you're losing from all these starters no longer being with you, or Micah Parsons being hurt?
Well, I don't think you're going to fill the void. I don't think you fill that void. I think it has to be with one guy. I think it has to be collective, right? And guys are just going to have to pop up from game to game and perform. Now, Van Ness is going to have that spotlight on him. It's going to have to start with Van Ness. He's going to have to be someone that really shines this year, and or at least has very consistent performances week in and week out. I'm not saying he needs to be at 8 sacks in 8 weeks when Micah returns. That's not what I'm saying. But he needs to be a guy that is a consistent performer, that's constantly applying pressure, that is getting to the quarterback. Maybe if it's a sack, great. If it's just getting to the quarterback and making him hurry that throw, fantastic, right? Like, it's those things that he's going to have to step up and do, and he's going to have to win in one-on-one situations. Because, like you said, you look down the rest of that defensive line. Yeah, they brought in Hargrave and guys like that that are good players. Are they pass rushers? Probably not what you think of right away when you think of those guys. So you look at the rest of that defensive line when they do line up in passing situations. Offenses are going to take away your best pass rusher. Whoever it is, whether that's Micah out there or not, they're going to find the best pass rusher. They're going to try to eliminate that threat the best they can. So it's going to be on Van Ness to win matchups when they're available to him in one-on-one situations and get home and cause problems. Or then when he does get double teamed, other guys are going to have to step up and have flashes in games that are productive. And then it's going to be up to Gannon, too, to scheme things until Mikey gets back. Going to have to be good schemes.
Yeah.
That scheme guys into good pass rushing situations, whether that's five-man pressures, six-man pressures that get home really quick, things like that, that can kind of, you know, put a Band-Aid on it until Mike is back, where you know you get him back and he's going to be around the quarterback majority of the game.
Brian, before we go to break here, you talked about Lucas Van Ness. Do you see the potential that Packers saw in Lucas? Do you see it somewhere in him?
Do I see what?
Do you see the potential that the Packers see in Lucas Van Ness?
Yeah.
Very reassuring.
Yeah, well, I mean, because it hasn't shown completely. And the thing was, it was showing the first, four weeks?
Yeah,
first 4 weeks of the season last year until he got hurt. And that was very, like very good to see him playing that way, right? Like, that was like, wow, like, that's a different – that looks like a different player. So it's – does he continue on that trajectory and continue to play like that? They're betting yes, and I can only go based on what I see. And that's that he's going to continue to play better. How much better? I don't know, but to invest – what was it? What was the tag? 14 million.
14 point, either 13.6 or something. 14 million. But it was It was definitely in that range.
Yeah, I mean that's not you know, betting the mortgage on it in today's NFL. If that makes sense, right? Like, that's not putting the mortgage on, you know, Lucas Van Ness becoming a 12 sack guy a year or a 10 sack guy a year. That's betting that he's going to be 6 to 8. Sacks and be a guy that complements Micah really well, and I think he can be that. Is he going to be able to do it without Micah there and be an issue for offenses without Micah? And that's, I mean, we're going to have to wait and see. But there were signs of it early last year. Obviously, Micah was there, but there were signs of it that he can be a disrupting factor when he's healthy. So that's what I'm hoping, that trajectory continues on early in this season, or at least for the 6 to 8 weeks.
It's the Homer Hour here on ESPN Wisconsin. Brian Bulaga, as always, on Mondays when we come back, Tyrod Taylor could be the key to an MVP for Jordan Love. He'll tell us exactly why next, or if it's not true, next.
The Homer Hour is back after this on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
All right, funky, funky. Tune into the new season of Behind the Bucks podcast on the Bucks Plus Audio Network, presented by Gallagher, your trusted insurance broker and HR and benefits consultant. Bucks vs. the World, narrated by comedian Charlie Behrens, reveals the untold story of the 1987 McDonald's Open, when the Bucks became the first NBA team to take on the best national team in the world, the Soviet Union. Before the Dream Team, this long-forgotten tournament in Milwaukee globalized the game of basketball and opened the doors to international stars coming to the NBA. Find Behind the Bucks on Bucks.com/plus, the Bucks app, the new ESPN Wisconsin app, and wherever you get your podcast. Behind the Bucks is presented by Gallagher. It is the Homer Hour here on ESPN Wisconsin, 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee. I'm Kyle Wallace, in for Homer, who's on assignment. Shout out to Alex Strofe holding it down behind the glass. Always joined on Mondays by Packers legend, future Packers Hall of Famer, we believe, right? Not a Packers Hall of Famer yet, right, Brian?
No, not a Packers Hall of Famer.
But we believe one day will be a Packers Hall of Famer, the great Brian Bulaga. Now, Brian, we've talked about Micah, we talked a little bit about Micah Parsons' injury. We talked about the fact that Christian Watson got the big contract. But something I'm really interested in, because Micah Parsons was talking about accountability, and I also saw Xavier McKinney talking about, you know, getting some veteran leaders inside the locker room. And so before we talk about accountability and veteran leadership, this is what I really want to know, because I've convinced myself the signing of Tyrod Taylor is not about how great of a backup quarterback he can be. It's about what he can provide for Jordan Love as another set of eyes and experience actually on game day. Can Tyrod Taylor unlock something in Jordan Love on game day that can help him become an MVP-type player but increase his level of play and make him better?
Yeah, first of all, I got to spend a year with Tyrod in L.A. And great guy, I think. I think from getting him as a backup quarterback is a phenomenal get. I think he's extremely smart. He's been around the game for a long time. So that alone, him in the meeting room with Jordan, bringing his experience, his knowledge, what he's seen from defenses over the years, because he's obviously he's played a lot of football from being a, you know, right what he is right now, a backup QB. He's played a ton of ball. And he's experienced a lot of things, and his play style with how he's able to move around and kind of create things with his legs. I'm not saying Jordan Love plays that way, because Jordan Love is more of a pocket passer type QB. But when healthy, as we've seen with Jordan Love, he can get out and move and create things and do that. And when that happens, the picture changes for the quarterback. When you get out on the move, the whole defense rotates, it shifts, and the picture changes. And there's no one that knows that better than, obviously, who he was with to start his Green Bay career, Aaron Rodgers, and now Tyrod Taylor, who that's his game is very similar to that, where he gets out on the perimeter, he can run, he can throw, and the picture changes on the move. So to have a guy that's able to be in a meeting room with you and on the sideline during games with you that can see these things and help out, I it's so valuable. Like, it really is to have a veteran guy like that.
Bulaga, so basically what you're telling, see, the problem is you're making me feel like, all right, so the level of play can be elevated for Jordan Love simply by having a veteran presence, because Malik Willis was not a veteran presence. He was just another guy that was trying to figure it out. But based off what Brian's saying, working with Tyrod Taylor for a season, but knowing the level of expertise he has, he can actually help Jordan be better on game day.
I think so. Yeah, I think so 100%. And it's a guy that Jordan can talk to that has experienced it, right? They can communicate on a certain level that Jordan can't communicate with, say, the third string guy, right? Like talking about certain things that are happening on the field or certain looks that those guys haven't experienced. Like they sure, we watched on film. I see that you should have done that, but it's different when it's live. Right. And Tyrod Taylor's experienced that. He's gone through it. He's done it. And he's done it a lot. He's played a lot of football. So, like, to me, having a guy like that that they can communicate, just talking, whether it's on the sideline during games or just in the meeting room and go over things, I think it's huge, in my opinion.
Do you think that was a goal of the Packers? Because I get this feeling when I look at Zaire Franklin, about to be 30. When I look at Javon Hargrave, 33 years old. When I look at Tyrod Taylor, I believe he's 36 years old or maybe going on 37. These are all older guys that nobody expected the Green Bay Packers to sign. Do you think the Packers kind of looked at this offseason, saw that, listen, we can't finish games, right? There might be a level of immaturity. Do you think they looked at this offseason and said, we don't just need to get older. We just need to bring in some guys that come with a little bit of veteran leadership. Do you think that's what it's about? Will that help the Packers be more accountable? Will it help the Packers finish games? How will these veteran leaders help this team get better this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been something I've been saying the last 2 years. You don't need to become a way older team, right? Like, doesn't need to be the second oldest team in the league overnight. But I think bringing in a couple veteran guys in certain positions around the team is beneficial, because it brings a – and I'm not going to sit here and say that the team's immature. I'm not saying that. But it brings a sense of a little bit of maturity to the team. Guys that have been around the league a long time. They've experienced a lot of different things, just like I was talking about Tyrod Taylor and helping Jordan Love. They've gone through a lot. They've been on different types of teams. They've been on good teams. They've been on bad teams. They know how – good teams respond and how they should respond. And then they know when things are going south because they've been on bad teams and they see how that is. So they can help try to pull guys out of that mindset and get them going in the right direction. That could be as simple as in a game, getting guys' minds right when things aren't going your way for a series or two, right? Like snap him out of it, get him back on track, focus on the next thing, mm-hmm. right? And sometimes when you're young in this league, and I experienced it when I was in my first and second year, sometimes you think too much about what just happened the last series, and you get caught up on it, and you need older guys to redirect you. And, like, thankfully I had that with Sitton and with Clifton and with Tausch and guys like that. And then obviously my next year was with TJ Lang. And, like, I had guys that had been around and seen a lot of things that could help redirect me, right? When I'm like, oh, man, that last series, that I can't believe that happened or that happened. It's like, hey, whatever. Who cares? Like, literally, who cares? Like, it's over now.
Yeah.
And sometimes when you're young and you don't have someone redirecting you like that, you stay hung up on it. Yeah, and then those things compound.
Brian, I hope because the Packers sugar honey iced tea the bed in the playoffs last year. They did it in Chicago as well. And so I'm hoping that what you're saying, it comes to life, because I really think there is this veterans anywhere, right? Leaders, guys that's been around, can just make guys feel more comfortable. When things are falling, you can have a guy to say, no, we good. But the Packers losing a double-digit lead with less than 6 minutes left in Chicago in a playoff game is unbelievable. 25 points allowed in the fourth quarter is unbelievable. So I'm hoping that these guys can help stop the bleeding next year.
Yeah, I mean, listen, is one guy going to fix that? I hope so, right? Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm hoping bringing in a couple veteran guys does fix it. But, like, that's a mentality change that shifts in an offseason, right? Like, that's not just one guy fixing a problem. That's a couple guys, like Mike had said and McKinney had said, like, holding more accountability. That's changing that mindset and that culture with all the entire group in an offseason, right? Like, that's what that takes. That's just not bringing in a couple veterans going, all right, guys, you figure this out. That's getting those guys of the current veteran leaders like Micah, like McKinney, like Love, like Josh Jacobs, like Christian Watson, getting those guys to help change the culture of the rest of the team and the mindset. And Green Bay has never been a place where there needed to be a culture change, mm-hmm. right? Like, even when Matt came in, there wasn't a culture change. The culture in the locker room, the standard was there. The precedent was set. Like, everything was already – how we performed in 18 and 17 was trash. We knew it was trash. It was absolutely trash. And we knew that wasn't the standard. The standard was winning the division, making the playoffs, at least going to an NFC championship. That's the standard. So Matt comes into that with those types of guys, and he doesn't have to come in and tell people what to do. That was a veteran-laden locker room. Like, it had vets all over it. And it was just getting the vets to buy into his scheme, which everyone did, and it goes as it does. But now when you have a younger locker room, you have to get these guys to obviously not just buy in. They already have, in my opinion. They've bought into everything that's going on, but it's getting the culture and the mindset of when we get in these situations, like against Chicago, it needs to be put to bed. Like, they're like, yeah, you may give up 14 points, but you may give them a little rally, but the rally needs to be, you know, water on the fire after that. And that's a mindset thing that now needs to be changed with these guys in the offseason. I think they got the right guys to do it.
I love to hear that. When we come back, we'll wrap up the Home Run with Brian Bulaga, and I just need to get from a tackle to another tackle. Not me, but I want to know, if he had an opportunity to work with Jordan Morgan, what would he tell him? We'll hear from Bulaga on that next.
More of the Homer Hour coming up next on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
It's the Homer Hour here on ESPN Milwaukee. We don't have too much time, but I do want to ask Brian Bulaga, who always joins the Homer Hour. We only got about 60 seconds here. If you had to give any advice to Jordan Morgan going into this season, right, former first-round pick, tackle to tackle, what advice would you give him going into the trenches and saying, I am the guy this year? What advice would you give him, Brian?
I mean, to me, I would tell him to be himself and adapt to what defenders are doing to him. Really study yourself more than anything, right? When you watch practice tape, when you do all those things, right, really study yourself. See the habits that you're doing throughout 11v11 period and what DNs could be picking up on, and make minor tweaks to it, and be conscious about it as you're on the field. Be yourself, but you can change things about your patterns and movements and things that you do that make defenders uncomfortable, or it doesn't make you as predictable. It's studying yourself more than, say, your opponent at times, because that was something that I would always find myself doing, is watching practice. I'd study game film of the other teams and opponent, but I'd watch myself in practice so much to see bad habits that may be creeping up, things that I'm doing that are obvious that could help me against the opponent I was playing. So that would be my advice, is really dive into yourself and be critical of yourself.
And that is Brian Bulaga on the Homer Hour. And we do it every day in honor of Brian Bulaga. ESPN Network is next.
In progress.
In progress. Peace out, y'all. Whatever you do, make sure you do it right.